the speech, the mind and the prana, these are to be employed for the purpose of meditation on the known realms of being, and those realms that are not known but are capable of being known by methods of knowledge, and those other realms which are unknown totally. So the comparison made between these three realms of objects of knowledge and the instruments, namely speech, mind and prana, is that speech expresses everything that is visible, that which is of the known world, while the mind can infer the existence of even those which are not directly known. The imperceptible also can be inferred by induction and deduction by the mind, and therefore the mind is to be meditated upon as connected with the realm which is superior to the merely perceptible or the visible. The prana is something inscrutable. It has already been mentioned that while the speech expresses what is known and the mind is superior to the realm of the speech because of the fact that it can argue by pros and cons the objects of knowledge and know things which are not yet directly perceptible, the prana is a different realm altogether over which we have no control. We can direct our thoughts by the employment of consciousness, and we can control our speech by the use of common sense, but we have no say in the matter of the movement of the prana. It has its own say. It works of its own accord by a law which is independent, as it were, of the one over which we have some sway or say. We can stop thinking, we can stop speaking, but we cannot stop breathing or restrain the activity of the prana completely. Yastu avijñātam, yadkincha avijñātam prāṇasya tadrūpam, prāṇa avijñātā prāṇa enam tadbhūtva avati. Here in the Upanishad, always it has been the practice to identify the prāṇa with the Hiranyagarbha, the cosmic prāṇa or the sutrātma. It is considered as the unknown. So, in this threefold meditation on the realms connected with speech, mind and prana, there is an inclusiveness of every realm of existence, that which is known, that which is hidden behind and yet not visible, perceptible, and that which is totally unknown. Well, we may even compare these three realms to the physical, the astral and the causal, by extension of meaning. So it is a kind of meditation on the three realms of existence, the visible, the invisible and the transcendent causal state. Tasyai vachaha prithivi shariram jyoti rupam ayam agnistat yavatyeva vak tavati prithivi tavan ayam agni. अतः एतस्य मनसो द्यौ शरीरं ज्योति रूपं असौ आदित्यस्तत् यावदेव मनः तावति द्यौ तावान् असौ आदित्यः तौ मिथुनं समेतां ततः प्राणः अजायत स इन्द्रः स एष असपत्नः द्वितीयः वै सपत्नः नास्य सपत्नो भवति य एवं वेद. ऑफ दिस स्पीच द होल अर्थ मे बी रिगार्डेड एज द अबोड, the body as it were, the embodiment. Even as fire, which is supposed to be the presiding deity over speech, is the light of the whole earth. Just as the earth becomes the abode for the manifestation of fire. Fire does not manifest itself without a means. And the means is any earth element. This principle of fire, which requires the element of the earth as its means or conducting principle, is the presiding duty of speech. So the connection between speech and the elements of earth and fire is that fire in its original nature as a divine principle, Agni, is the superintending power over speech, and the earth, naturally because it is the abode of all ignition and power of burning, should equally be regarded as the realm over which speech has sway. So Prithvi and Agni, earth and fire, are the abode as well as the light, the expressing power, respectively, of the function of speech. The speech, therefore, extends over everything over which earth elements have sway and over which speech as Agni also has sway. Yavatyeva vak tavati prithivi tavanayam Agni. This is a subtle form of meditation whereby an enquiry is made into the very principle of speech and entry is gained into the principle of fire, which is regarded as the deity of speech. And by this subtle method of enquiry, which is a meditative process, one gains mastery over the principles of earth as well as fire. Likewise is the meditation to be conducted over the mind and the prana in respect of their realms or the regions over which we have sway. Atha etasya manasa dyau shariram. The heaven and the atmosphere are the abode of the activities of the mind. The sun himself is the light, in the light of which the mind functions. And whatever be the region which is held under sway by sun, as well as by the entire atmosphere and the heavens, that is the region over which mind also can travel. The mind has a greater capacity to understand than the speech, which only expresses what is already understood by the mind. The realms which are superior to or higher than the earth and the fire are taken here as objects of contemplation by the mind, namely the sun and the atmospheric region and including even the heavens. Speech and mind combined together produce prana as their child, as it were, is a favorite theme of the Upanishads. This is a subtle psychology. Prana is universal energy, no doubt. But it functions in a particular manner in the body of an individual on account of the intentions of the mind. The mind, it is that restrains the prana and locates it within the body. Otherwise, we would not be so much intensely conscious of this body alone as our own self. the prana is equally present in every person, every body, everywhere, in every part of creation. But we are not apparently connected with the manifestations of prana through other bodies, other individuals and other species of beings. Our direct connection seems to be with this particular embodiment, which is presided over by a single mind, which is again connected by an ego, a self-affirmative principle. And so, the Upanishad in this passage suggests that the particular localized function of the prana in this embodiment of the individual, being made possible by the activity of the mind, in connection with the speech, which is the instrument of expression of the mind, we should consider prana as the effect, as it were, of the combined activity of mind and speech. Tau mithunam samayitam tataha prana ajayata. By the combined activity of these two, by a joint collaboration of mental intention and the power of speech, prana functions in a particular manner, in a given manner, in a direction which is already laid down in the particular individuals, one differing from the other. One who knows this secret goes beyond the limitation of prana, mind and speech. The analysis provided here in these passages of the Upanishad is intended to gain entry into a realm which transcends the ordinary realm of speech, mind and prana as individuals. By analysis of this kind, we begin to understand what is the reason behind the limitation imposed upon speech, mind and prana. When the limitation is understood, we gain mastery over the limitation. We become unlimited in our capacity over these functions. And then one does not have any opposing force in front of him or her. Then he becomes lord over everything, Indra. Indra is master over everything. And he becomes free from any kind of opposition from outside. So, asapatraha, he has no enemy outside. And who is an enemy? Anyone who is other than you is your enemy. Anyone who is external to you is your enemy, because you have to fear anyone who is not you. So, here, in the case of this master of meditation, one who is other than him does not exist. And therefore, there cannot be enmity from any side. He is unopposed in every direction. Dhitiyo vai sapatra, the inimical force is that which is external to you. But there is no such thing here. Nasya sapatra bhavati. He shall not have inimical opposition from any quarter whatsoever. In the case of which person? Ya evam veda. One who knows this secret. But in the case of others, there is bondage and there is division, conflict on account of the presence of externals. Atha etasya pranasya apashariram. As is the case with speech and mind, so is the case with prana in its instrumentality in meditation. Water is the abode or the body, the embodiment of prana. The Upanishads tell us that the essence of water that we drink goes to form the prana or energy within us. The prana gets dried up if there is no water element in our body. It becomes exuberant and very energetic and active due to the preponderance of the water principle in the body. So water is regarded as the embodiment of the body of the prana. Pranasya apashariram, yotirupam aso chandra. It is again a doctrine of the Upanishads especially that the moon is watery in effect, perhaps due to the coolness of the rays of the moon and certain other esoteric reasons which the Upanishads propound in various these in different contexts. So the prana is connected with the moon as well as the waters, both being related to water principle in some way or the other. Asau chandraha tad yavaneva prana tavatya apaha tavanaso chandraha ete sarva eva samaha. In contemplation, we are not supposed to make a distinction among the speech and the mind and the prana. They are equal. The realms over which they have sway are of a similar character. The three worlds are only three densities of a single manifestation of creation. They are not three different worlds actually. They are three types of density, three degrees of expression of a single embodiment in the form of this vast manifestation. And so, they are to be regarded as single, uniform and not distinct one from the other. Sarva eva samaha, sarve anantaha, all are infinite in their capacity ultimately. There is nothing which speech cannot achieve if it is properly directed based on truth. There is nothing which the mind cannot do if it is based on truth. And there is nothing which the prana cannot achieve if it functions on the basis of truth. So sarve anantaha, every one of these is infinite in its capacity essentially. Though in their manifested forms through the bodies of individuals, they appear to be limited in their capacities. The words that we utter do not have infinite capacity because of the fact the speech of ours is limited to the bodily conditions. But if it transcends bodily conditions, words become true. Whatever you speak will become manifest at once. This is the power of speech of great masters and yogins. If they say anything, it happens. Because they have transcended the limitation of speech, which otherwise is the case with individuals who are body conscious intensely. So is the mind. If an ordinary person thinks, it may not materialize. But if a powerful mind thinks, a yogin's mind especially, it shall materialize at once. Because the capacity to materialize any thought is due to the connection of the mind with infinite background. The force comes from infinity. It does not come merely from the particularized manifestation of the mind. If the mind tunes itself with the cosmic mind, any thought will materialize itself at once, in any form whatsoever. So is the prana. Even a mere breath is as powerful as a mere thought or a word. Certain gurus initiate disciples even by breathing. Some initiate merely by look. Some others initiate by thought. And certain others by actual words of expression. So it means there is power hidden in everything. Every faculty is very kept, very much potent to execute the function which is expected of it, provided that it is connected to infinite power. If an unlimited powerhouse is at the background of an electrical connection, any strength of wattage or voltage can flow through that conducting medium. The only condition is, you should be connected to an inexhaustible powerhouse. If that is the case, nothing is impossible. This is the case with every yogin. His mind and prana and speech become unified. Whereas in the case of an ordinary individual, they are different functions. The mind and the speech and the prana are independent as it were in the case of ordinary individuals. But in the case of a master or a yogin, they are three expressions of a single intent of the soul. So that it is soul that manifests itself as speech, mind and prana in the case of a knower, not otherwise. Sa yaha ha etan antavata upaste antavatam salokam jayati. If we are ignorant enough to imagine that we are limited to this body alone, and therefore we can speak only what is in connection with this body. We can think only what is in connection with this body, and we can have the function of the prana only in relation to this body, then limited is the result that we can achieve through these functions. But if our contemplation is on infinitude, yaha etan anantanupaste anantam salokam jayati. Infinity is the effect that you can produce by word, speech and breathing even. If your soul is connected to the infinite, then every function can produce any effect. What speech can execute, prana can do. What prana can do, mind can do. And so on in the case of every other function. Otherwise, ordinarily, each function has its own independent capacity, which is different from the capacity of other functions. But in the case of a yogin, they mingle one with the other, so that anyone can perform the function of any other. Thought and speech and soul differ not one from the other in the case of one who has identified himself with the infinite source of things. The meditation is further extended in the following section of the Upanishad. Sa esha samvatsara prajapati shodashakalaha. We can contemplate the creative principle in its relevance to the principle of time or the passage of time. As we have observed earlier, the Upanishads give us various symbologies for contemplation. You can utilize any phenomenon for the purpose of meditation. Anything and everything in this world of space, time and objects can become an instrument or an aid in the practice of meditation on the Absolute. You can meditate on space, you can meditate on time, you can meditate on any object. Any one of these can become a passage to the infinite. So here the suggestion is that certain aspects of the manifestation of time can be regarded as instruments for purpose of meditation. The great creator is 16-fold in his powers, as it were. Shodashakala Prajapati. Prajapati is the creator. He has 16 forces, 16 aspects of energy, or 16 digits of expression. Now, these 16 digits are compared here for the purpose of meditation with the 16 digits of the moon, who is connected with the 16 processes by way of days and nights, which constitute a half of the lunar month. There are 15 days in the bright half of the lunar month, as there are 15 days in the dark half of the lunar month. One half of the lunar month is of the waxing moon, the other half is of the waning moon. Both are of 15 days. 15 days and 15 nights. Now, each particular day, including the night, is supposed to have connection with one digit of the moon. And each particular digit is connected with the mental functions in an individual. It is often said that the mind is the presiding deity over the mind. Moon is the presiding deity over the mind. The waxing and the waning of the moon has some connection with the waxing and the waning of mental horizons. People who are insane or not proper in their mood generally are supposed to be affected by the movements of the moon.
but they are affect, the moon affects even normal persons, not merely insane persons. But the normal persons do not feel the effect so much as the others who have no control over their minds. Because of the immense force that we exert on our own minds due to our ego, we are unable to feel the force of the moon on our minds. But if we are to relax the mind completely and not impress the ego upon the mind too much, then we may be able to feel the distinction we feel one day after another as the moon waxes or wanes. The powers of the mind are 16-fold, sometimes complete incarnations of God are regarded as endowed with 16 powers, Shodasha Kala Murti, as we call them. The 16 kalas or 16 digits are the 16 powers of the mind. The 16 powers are always not manifest in every individual, so that no one is entirely in possession of one's own mind. We have control over certain aspects of the mind, but not over the entire mind. If we are identical in our soul with the whole of the mind, then we can simply lift the whole world with our hands. Such strength does not come to anyone because of partial identification of consciousness with the mind or the mental functions. Here, the meditation process suggests that the digits or the powers which are symbolically connected with the 15 days and nights of the half of the lunar month are veritably forces of Creator Himself. Shodashakalastasya Ratraya Eva Panchadashakala Dhruvaivasya Shodashikala. The moon has, and the mind also has, one transcendent element in it, which is called the 16th kala, or the 16th digit. The 15 are temporal, the one is transcendent. The 15 days and night represent the temporal aspect of the digits. The 16th one is not included in the 15 days and nights. It is supposed to be invisible. And at a particular juncture between the new moon and the next day of the new moon, as well as between the full moon and the next day of the full moon, the 16th digit is supposed to operate in the moon and the minds of people also. That is why Purnimasi and Amavasi are regarded as very holy days. Full moon and new moon are considered as of special importance in religious parlance. Special worships, etc. are conducted on full moon and new moon days, because the mind assumes a role which it cannot on other days. It becomes complete in itself. It is completely absorbed or completely expressed, but not partially absorbed or partially expressed as in other days. So the 15 days and night represent the 15 kalas or digits, and the one that is invisible midway between the full moon or the new moon and the other day is the 16th one, the element of transcendence, which is permanent digit. Dhruvai vasya chodashi kala. Sa ratri vireva acha puriyate apachathiyate saha amavasyam ratrim etaya chodashaya kalaya sarvavidam prana bhrut anupravishya tataha pratar jayate. It is the belief among people well versed in the science of occultism and higher psychology that the moon enters every part of creation by its 16th digit in the Amavasya day or the new moon day. Physicians, especially those who are Ayurvedic physicians, are very particular in extracting the juices of certain herbs on the Amavasya day and give it to patients, because that is supposed to be highly medical in its value. Especially plants are supposed to be tremendously influenced by the moon on Amavasya day. And religiously minded people do not pluck leaves on Amavasya days. They do not touch trees and plants lest they be hurt on Amavasya days. The reason is that the 16th digit of divinity is supposed to be present in all the forms of creation. And that day, special religious festivals are held, worships are conducted, etc., on account of the connection this particular digit has with the mind as well as with the moon, whose waxing and waning are the causes of the 15 and the 16 digits being manifested. Etam ratrim pranavrataha pranam navichindyat. On the Amavasya day, do not hurt anyone, says the Upanishad. Not anyone's, even plants, not even the least of animals like a lizard. Krikalasasya itasya eva devataya apajitya. Even such insignificant things like fly and mosquito and lizard, don't hurt them on that day. Divinity manifests itself uniformly in a mysterious manner on the new moon day. The great divinity is to be adored in all creation, particularly that day, on account of its special manifestation is an occult secret of this Upanishad mentioned in this particular passage for the purpose of meditation on the digits of the moon in their connection with the mind as the time process taken as the target of meditation. Yo vai sa samvatsara prajapatihi shodashakala ayamevasa yaha ayam evam vitpurushatasya vittameva panchadashakala atmevasya shodashikala. Now another symbology is given for purpose of meditation. Sixteen are supposed to be the digits of power in a human being. And 15 are temporal, one is transcendent. One aspect of this meditation has already been explained. The other aspect is being explained now. Whatever you have and whatever you are, these two aspects are the objects of meditation here. You know the distinction between these two. Whatever you have and whatever you are. Whatever you have is called wealth, and whatever you are is called the soul. Now, whatever you have is temporal, whatever you are is eternal. People generally lay too much emphasis on what they have rather than what they are. There is a tendency in people to accumulate more and more of wealth and extend the domain of their possessions. They want to have the largest infinitude of having rather than being. It is naturally expected of people to enhance their being to infinitude. But instead of that, they try to enhance their having to infinitude. So there is a greed to possess more and more of things. Even the whole earth, if you possess, you will not be satisfied. If the earth and the heavens are to become your possession, you are not going to be satisfied. Because satisfaction does not come from any temporal relationship. Satisfaction is a character of eternity manifest. And if our relationship is only with the temporal, that we really are, shall always remain grief-stricken, sorrow-stricken, and neglected completely. We neglect our being in our interest in what we want to have in this world. This should not be. A coordination has to be established between what we have and what we are, or what we would like to have and what we ought to be. Vitta is the word used in this Upanishadic passage for anything that is called wealth in general. Any property, anything that you expect to possess, anything that is worthwhile as a valuable in this world, an appurtenance of your life, is the vitta or the wealth of yours. The whole wealth of the world which people would like to covet and have is the 15 aspected digit. It is so large indeed, but it is a temple. The world is apparently larger than you. Apparently only, not really. It looks as if we are so insignificant, little individuals crawling like insects on the surface of the earth, while the earth and the world around us is so big, so terrifying, as if to engulf us. So, in a way, the 15 number seems to be bigger than the single number 1. 1 is smaller than 15, but this 1 is bigger than the 15, really speaking, even as the soul is superior to the whole world. Vittameva panchadashakala atmeva sishodashikalasa vittena eva cha puriyate apachakshiyate. A person appears to wax and wane according to the extent of the wealth that one has. The richer you are in your possessions, the larger you consider yourself to be in your estimation of yourself and others. The lesser is your wealth and riches, the poorer you consider yourself to be. So there is a waxing and waning of the individual also, as is the waxing and the waning of the moon outside. But the waxing and the waning of the individual in respect of wealth outside is not to be laid emphasis upon too much. Because even if all the wealth is lost, there is something in you which is more valuable than everything that you have lost. Vittena eva cha puriyate apachakshiyate tadetan nabhyam yadayam atma. The Atman or the Self that you are is like the axle of a wheel, which is the cause of the movement of the wheel, notwithstanding the fact that the spokes also are necessary. While the spokes move up and down, the axle does not move. It is the permanent element to which is fixed the movement of the wheel. Likewise is the entire world of possessions and wealth, riches, which rotate and revolve around the axle of the Self, without which there would be no motion of the earth at all. Just as without the axle, there cannot be movement of the wheel. Tadet nabhyam yadayam atma pradhirvittam. The soul is the center. The wealth that you have is only a periphery, a circumference as it were. Tasmat yadyapi sarvajnanim jiyate atmana che jivati pradhina agaditevahu. People generally are in a position to console themselves and regain their composure even after losing everything that they possess, provided that their soul power is intact. People do not grieve so much for the loss of wealth as for the loss of themselves. You know very well that you are more valuable than your wealth. You have a greater love for your own self ultimately than for everything and anything that you possess. So if everything and anything that you have is lost completely, and you alone are left finally single, unbefriended, unconnected with others, yet you have a satisfaction of your own. After all, I am. If you also are not to be, that would be much worse than to lose everything that you have. So the contemplation is, the Atman is superior to everything that is external and possessional. And as is the connection between the circumference and the center, or the spokes and the wheel, four spokes of the wheel with the axle, so is the connection with the Atman of the entire world of possessions and riches outside. They have to be coordinated in a proportionate and harmonious manner for the purpose of establishing union between the external and the internal, finally laying the proper emphasis on the universal internal, which is the Atman, which when realized, the greed for wealth vanishes and even the need for possession becomes absent totally, because of the fact that the Atman is all the wealth of the world. It is not merely a center in you,
but a center which is everywhere.
Atha trayo vavaloka manushya loka pitrloko devaloka iti soyam manushya loka putre devajaya nanyena karmana karmana pitrloka vidya devaloka devaloko vayaloka nam shirishta tasmat vidyam prashamsanti.
There are three worlds as we have already studied, this world and the atmospheric world and the celestial world. The Manushya Loka, the Pitra Loka and the Deva Loka, as the scripture tells us. And we have to gain entry into all these worlds and gain mastery over them. Renown in this physical world is attempted to be perpetuated by people. Even after death, they want to be known to people. How can you perpetuate your greatness even after death? The progeny of yours is the perpetuation of your glory. The son says, I am the father of such and such a great man. So the great man's name continues through the son. The progeny is the continuation of the glory and the value of any person. So one gains renown in the world of physical realms by the progeny that he has. The family continues his tradition. Otherwise, he would be cut off root and branch by the death of the physical body. The physical world remembers the individuality of a person through the legacy that he leaves in the form of the family tradition and the children. Hence, one gains this world, as it were, through the progeny. Manushyaloka putre neva jayah. Nanyena karmana. You can't achieve renown in this physical world after your death by no other means than by this that is suggested. Karmana pitarloka. But if you want to gain entry into the world of the forefathers, the ancestors, there is no other way than to perform certain rites which are of a sacrificial nature. Certain libations, certain yajnas are performed, whose effects, called apurvas, produce an effect which carry the soul after death to the Pitarloka, wherein the soul enjoys the results of its karmas until the momentum of those actions are exhausted and then comes back to this world to repeat the same action and so on endlessly in the cycle of time. Karmana pitarloka vidyaya devaloka. The higher realms are to be attained only through knowledge, not by progeny, not by any kind of ritual, but by understanding, by spiritual contemplation. Here devaloka is to be understood in the sense of every realm that is superior to the pitarloka. There are seven realms according to the traditions of India's culture particularly and many other cultures. First three are temporal, the last four are spiritual, austere in their nature and connected to divine forces. So the celestial realms, the divine regions, are to be attained by knowledge. And not by action of any kind, not by rights, not by progeny, not by possession, not by wealth. Na karmana, na prajaya, dhane, na tyage, naike, amrutattva, manashuhu, says the Mahanarayana Upanishad. Not by wealth, not by rights, not by progeny can these divine regions be attained. But by knowledge, by austerity, by renunciation, how? We shall see tomorrow. Hari Om Tat Sat.